Why are police photographing our license plates?
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Welcome to the Reasonable Voice radio show. I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice. The mission of the Reasonable Voice is to connect the dots between politics and finance, the need for better and more affordable education, our humanity, world peace, and of course, the arts, which we then gladly provide our listeners, the voting public, as informative food for thought to provoke their self-determination and appetite for equal economic opportunity and justice for all without truth decay. The Reasonable Voices are advocates prioritizing education, preserving our history, leading by example for a peaceful and prosperous world by evoking and embracing both creative artists and political unity as solutions to our challenges. Good afternoon and welcome to the radio show for Reasonable Voices. I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, and today my guest is Benjamin K. Rowe, the Executive Director of the Heifetz International Music Institute. Good afternoon, Ben, and welcome to the Reasonable Voices Radio.
Well, thank you very much, Marcello. It's a pleasure to join you.
My pleasure to have you. You know, I'm an old Peabody graduate, so anything about music, the culture of music and the arts, is, you know, I just love it. But one of the first things I wanted to ask you, it's an international music institute, and I know what that means, but talk to us about where you are. Where is home for the Heifetz Institute?
Well, the Heifetz Institute home is actually not very far from your studio, Marcello. Uh-huh. We are over the mountain in Stanton, Virginia. We have a summer program that we run on the campus of Mary Baldwin College, soon to be Mary Baldwin University.
Yes.
We also have a little gift shop and retail store and box office right on Beverly Street in the historic downtown of Stanton. If you've ever been here, you know that we have quite a charming little downtown area. Mm-hmm. And we're right steps away from the American Shakespeare Theater. Some of your listeners know where that is.
Oh, okay. You know, I was just talking, someone the other day mentioned that I should have the Shakespeare Theater folks on the show, and I've emailed them and they've said yes, and we're trying to put it together, and here you are just a few steps away. Well, that's great. That's terrific. So how long have you been in Stanton?
Well, the Institute has been in Stanton. We're about to begin our fourth summer there. The Institute is 19 years old.
Wow.
It was founded by, people say Heifetz.
Yes.
They naturally assume that it's Yasha Heifetz.
Yes.
You know, one of the most famous classical musicians of the entire 20th century.
There yes.
was just a documentary on about him called God's Fiddler, to give you an idea
yes.
of the outsized reputation that Yasha Heifetz had.
Mm-hmm.
The Heifetz Institute, actually, though, was founded by a cousin. Yasha Heifetz, Daniel Heifetz, who is very much with us. He's the founder and artistic director and a great concert violinist in his own right. In mm. fact, Marcello, your listeners might find it interesting to know that Yasha Heifetz, at an early age, or when Daniel was an early age, was invited by his famous cousin to be his student. And if you know anything about Yasha Heifetz, you know that he was somebody who did not make an invitation like that lightly. He
yes.
was a very serious guy.
Yes.
And had quite a violin studio of students in Los Angeles at the University of Southern California. But regardless, Daniel Heifetz actually turned down the opportunity to study with Yasha and instead flew on his own volition at the age of 16 to across the country to the Curtis Institute and auditioned for another great violinist, Ephraim Zimbalist Jr.
Yes.
And he did it mid-semester, and Zimbalist told him, this cheeky young lad, that, well, I don't have time for you. It's the middle of the semester, and who do you think you are? And come next week for your first lesson. I think that kind of willingness to forge his own path
yes.
Has really defined Daniel Heifetz and how the Institute really got founded, because Daniel has been went from being the young Heifetz to the other Heifetz to just Daniel Heifetz. Mm. In fact, if you remember the name of the famous impresario, Saul Hurock.
Oh, yes.
Daniel was actually the youngest artist ever signed by Saul Hurock.
Oh, wow. That's impressive. All right, so he is the founder of the Heifetz Institute, and you're calling Staten, Virginia, home, which is, you know, on the one hand, somebody who doesn't know the area might say, why would you go to Staten, Virginia? But I think it's a perfect place, knowing the Blue Ridge Mountains. What a beautiful setting to focus in such an environment and in such the middle of history, and to be able to focus on the culture and the arts. I think it was a perfect choice. So that's my opinion.
I'm glad to get that opinion, because in a way, there is this great tradition, Marcello, of where summer festivals are founded. If you think back to the origins of places like Tanglewood or Marlborough,
yes,
or Aspen, or even the festivals in Europe, they all came from that idea. It's a very romantic notion, actually, that mm-hmm. you go off into the mountains,
yes,
where you can have a retreat. You're away from the hurly-burly of life, where you can have a moment to sort of clear your head of the daily concerns and really kind of focus in a real kind of mentorship and learning environment with peers, with great masters. So in one sense, it's a very old tradition, but it's a new one here in the Blue Ridge, but yeah. I couldn't agree more with what you say. And adding to that, too, I think the idea that here we have in Staten, I love this word I heard the other day, it's called a micropolitan. Here in a place with 25,000 people, we have got, you know, award-winning restaurants. We've got three brew pubs within a stone's throw of our headquarters. We have amazing vineyards, and we've got the Shakespeare Company. We've got the Heifetz Institute. We have the Staten Music Festival. We've got artisan crafts and glass blowing, and even the kind of the agricultural, you know, CSA movement with, you know, Polyface Farm being
yes.
in this region. So there's an awful lot that I think that this region adds mm-hmm. to that kind of, well, I guess if you were a brewer, you'd say the ferment.
Recently, haven't they done, started at least a renovation of the downtown in Staten as well?
Staten, in its historic preservation and architecture, never got really damaged in the way that a lot of other places
yes.
in Virginia did. And there's been a real embrace of that now, so that people come to, it's really interesting for us because we actually have, as I mentioned, the gift shop right in our main
yes.
street. And the number of people that come here from out of town and simply cannot believe that a city the size of Staten here, you know, in the middle of Virginia, which some people might say the middle of nowhere, and they cannot believe all of the culture that's here.
Well, you know, Virginia, I'll say especially Central Virginia, is not only beautiful, it's full of history. And I discovered Staten a few years ago, just driving around once I had come to the area, and went over the mountain, and there it was. And I went, you know, and I loved the architecture so much. Well, okay, let's get back to the Heifetz, though. What is the mission of the Heifetz Institute? I know you're very focused. It's like a super outreach of interconnecting global cultural mission. Is that too much?
Well, no. I'll give you the extremely short course about sort of, you know, the core business of the Heifetz Institute.
Okay.
It is that we run a top flight, and I really mean top flight, summer program for young string musicians. That means violin, viola, and cello. And we bring in students, I mean, really people who are going to have professional careers. They will range in age between 13 and 27, and they really do come, and here's the international part of the Institute, from all over the world.
Wow.
China, Taiwan, Hong Kong, Korea, Germany, Spain, France, London. We have a student coming from Scotland, really from all over the world, and they come to study with faculty who come from, well, you mentioned that you went to Peabody. There's
yes.
also Curtis and Juilliard,
yes.
the
yes.
Cleveland Institute of Music, the Royal College of Music in London, conservatories in Germany and in France. So that's the core business.
Wow.
But I could also tell you, Marcello, that description could apply to another dozen or so music festivals around the world or around the country.
Mm.
We mentioned some of them, places like Aspen or
yes.
Tanglewood or Marlborough or something like that. But there's something that is unique about the Heifetz Institute. unlike any other music program in the entire world.
Mm.
And that was really the genius, and some might say the secret sauce of what Daniel Heifetz created.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where we talk about communication training.
Yes.
Now, just to tell you a moment about my background, both my wife and I, who's the general manager, come from backgrounds in broadcasting and communications, which is one thing that led me to the Heifetz Institute.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Heifetz Institute, we are training not only people to be great technicians, mm-hmm. but also to be great musicians. And through that comes this communication training idea. So in addition to studying with world-famous teachers and having chamber music coaching sessions with members of the Emerson Quartet and that sort of thing,
wow.
in the afternoons, they take lessons every week in courses like public speaking. We give them voice lessons. We give them drama and improvisation lessons. We give them movement lessons so they can understand what dance forms are about and how they translate them.
Yes.
We give them lessons in health and wellness about how to prevent injuries and how to maintain injuries, have them address what's in their diet. The long and short of it is that Daniel Heifetz had the somewhat radical notion that not only great technical performance, but also emotional, contextual content also needed to and could be taught and performed. It wasn't just that you had to kind of innately feel it.
Yes.
You had to understand how to communicate emotion in music. And a lot of that really begins with teaching these kids how to, I call them kids, you'll excuse me, teaching these young students how to basically become more fully formed personalities.
Yes.
Why should I pay my money to come and sit in a concert and listen to you play something if you aren't actually reaching me, if you're not communicating mm-hmm. to me, if you're not conveying the power, the beauty, and the meaning, and the profundity of a piece of music that you're playing?
Absolutely. You know, I have to tell you, when a guest from Waynesboro, the Wayne Theater, Claire Myers, when he was on the show, he mentioned you, and he mentioned this particular approach that you do with the total artist, the total communicator. And I went, I have got to talk to those people. And so that, in addition to being on soaps, I directed a great deal of theater in my career and in New York. And one of the things I was always a challenge to make actors and singers and dancers understand is that, you know, it's, I hope you feel great after your performance and enjoy your curtain call and the memory as you go home. But this is primarily a communication that you are giving so that those people sitting out in the dark get the feeling and the emotion. And they are taken to the place where you want them to go and they want to go. That's the goal. And when I see performers who clearly are enjoying their performance, and that's great, I have nothing against that, but it's stopping at, I can't say the footlights anymore, nobody says footlights anymore, but, you know, at the apron of the stage. When people would ask me, as a director, why don't you ever sit and watch your shows? Because I always stood at the back of the theater. As I said, I've directed this. I know what's supposed to be happening. If they move me when I'm standing at the back of the house, then all is well. So I hear what you're saying, this whole thing of separating mind from body, even that's crazy, but to try and separate one's soul and emotion and communicative skills, well, you said it, so I'm just all that to say I agree, and I'm so impressed with this approach at the Heifetz. Wow.
It's quite interesting. You mentioned about you know, in the darkened theater, there is a fascinating connection between what we do at the Heifetz Institute actually, and the American Shakespeare Theater. You might have heard that the motto of the American Shakespeare Theater is that we do it with the lights on.
Yes.
They actually try to erase that boundary between what's on stage and what's in the audience. In fact, when I came here last year, I was one of about a dozen members of the audience who were placed on stage, and where we became involuntarily part of the action, which was for a comedy of errors.
And very Shakespearean.
The role of useful prop. But at the same time, for a Heifetz performance, we also work assiduously to blur those lines between who's on stage and who's part of the audience.
Yes.
Not through gags and props so much as we really want to create a more direct line of communication.
Yes.
So when you come to a Heifetz concert, and I invite you to come to one of our 41 concerts this summer, Marcello, one thing
okay.
that you'll notice right away is that our performers, for example, are not permitted to sit around in nice comfy chairs
mm-hmm.
or either at their music stands. We require our string players, our violinists and violists, to stand when they play for
uh-huh.
the duration of the concert.
Uh-huh.
When they play solo works, we don't let them use music stands. They have mm-hmm. to memorize the pieces. We ask the cellists, we don't make stands because they can't, but what we do is we actually have these unique platforms we call cello boxes uh-huh. that elevate them so that they're at a higher level so that you can see them better
uh-huh.
when you're standing there in the back row. And we really work to keep the audience always sort of front and center in our performances. The players will introduce the works that they play. We don't rely on just handing out a printed program. You can see the printed program.
Yes.
They'll tell you about the works you're about to play and what they mean to them. You're also going to notice that, by the way, just like the Reduced Shakespeare Company, we're talking a lot about Shakespeare here,
yes.
where they, you know, their motto is that they cut out the boring bits.
Yes, yes.
Well, we actually are willing to say that there are some classical music pieces that have some boring bits in them, so we don't play them.
Oh.
So that you might, instead of in a program where you'll hear maybe two or three works in a concert program, you might hear six to a dozen works in uh-huh. a Heifetz program, partly to keep things moving along and partly because we have so many talented students, we want to give them all a chance to perform. So if there's a string quartet that's got a great last movement, you'll hear that great last movement.
Mm.
And this is, you know, this is definitely a more radicalized concept in
mm-hmm.
many ways, but we also know that we also need to provide context and meaning for what we're doing and be able to attract people who have, let's face it, more competing interests these days for
yes.
their cultural entertainment
yes.
and shorter attention spans.
I can see that, and I'll tell you a quick story before we go to break and get your reaction maybe. In auditioning actors in New York, often when people were new to it or whatever the issue was, I remember I used to use an old trick. When the actor just, I thought there was something there, but they weren't giving it to me, I would say, take that folding chair over there and put it in front of you. Don't sit, just put it in front of you. And then suddenly I got this performance. And then I said, now, the problem is, you can't always stand behind furniture to act. And you've taken away the music stand, and there we are. Plus the idea that the musician must be able to explain the work. Not just technically and intellectually, but from an emotional, cultural standpoint. Wow. I can't say enough about that. It must be so thrilling to see young people embrace this new approach, this openness, this taking down the barriers. Is that what you find?
It really is, Marcello, and it has been. There is nothing more exciting than we take these artists around. We'll talk about more after the break.
Yes.
But we also do a touring program, and uh-huh. I think we should go into that.
We will.
But no question that it's so exciting to see not only their talent and energy and dedication, but also the way that they do take up and embrace this. Now, for some of this isn't easy, but because it's not
yes.
how they've been taught.
That's right.
But getting a hold of the concept and then watching the reaction that it gets from an audience makes it quite worthwhile.
Exactly. It's. I can see that it would be new, but because you're dealing with young people, it's something that can then advance and evolve from them as they go around the world, quite literally, and with this new approach of inside out, this new connection. Anyway, we must run for now. Everyone, stay with us. We are having an exhilarating, I hope as much for you as it is for me, conversation with Benjamin K. Rowe, who is the executive director of the Heifetz International Music Institute, who believes that music and those who perform it and hear it are all one. This is fabulous stuff, and stay with us. We'll be right back.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. Force majeure, a legal term freeing all parties from obligation in the face of an act of God. It's a beautiful day. A happy family, mom, dad, and beloved children on their annual ski vacation. No pressures, forget about work, etc. This is family life, beautifully mundane. After a morning skiing, it's lunchtime, and what better than a cafe with a view up the majestic slopes? Beautiful. A presumably controlled avalanche is rumbling down the slopes. How exciting. Getting closer. Wow. And closer. Uh-oh. Raw white powder overcomes the cafe as Dad chooses to save himself, leaving his family to fend for themselves. But the avalanche threatening to bury the cafe turns out to be a harmless snow cloud. Now what? Life goes on. Subtly, but fundamentally changed. Identity redefined in an instant. Force Majeure turns out to be one of the most interesting films of 2014, raising quiet but powerful questions. None of us can be confident of how we might react in such a situation. Watching the ramifications unfold on the screen asking, "What would I have done?" cannot be avoided. Can we really know ourselves until we are tested? And should we fail at a fateful moment? Can those we love continue to love and accept us? And more importantly, can we accept ourselves? Force Majeure. Not in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Welcome back to the radio show for Reasonable Voices. I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, and again, we're talking with Benjamin K. Rowe, the executive director of the Heifetz International Music Institute, which reaches out across the globe for talented young people and brings them back to Stanton, Virginia, in the Blue Ridge Mountains, where beautiful, magical communication happens. Total communication. And as I promised a quick story as we were signing off last, I'm a vocal graduate of the Peabody Conservatory of Music. Before going into directing theater in New York, I directed operas and for a short time was the assistant stage director for the Peabody Opera Department. And when I first entered Peabody, there was glorious singing, but there was no dramatic training. There was no acting. That's just the way opera was done. One of the things I pushed for very early on was get some acting training for those great singers. And they brought in a great television director from New York, who Harvey Vincent, wonderful talent. And he sometimes is snow trips or whatever, and quickly said, "Well, Marcello, you need to start rehearsals without me and I'll come in." And that's when I was first able to marry the talents that I love so much. But getting back to you now and the Heifetz International Music Institute, I think you are so far ahead of where we were back then because you recognize, obviously, Daniel Heifetz recognized, obviously, that the artist has to be a whole person because the art and the culture are all-inclusive. Let me get to a question. How's that? Let's talk about, because you've already answered my performance and communication training but question, but what about scholarships?
Just for Marcello, that story.
Yes.
That you have there demonstrated, you know, that need has not gone away.
Yes.
And that need is still not nearly well understood enough.
I know.
So clearly, we find that still to this day that, I mentioned to you in our earlier segment.
Yes.
That, we require our performers to stand.
Yes.
Well, for goodness sake, why isn't that happening in a college orchestra?
Yes.
There still is, I think, a great deal of resistance to doing things in a different way because the answer is, and I'm sure you have this in theater world, we've always done it that way.
Yes, God. I used to think people only said that in the movies, but people say it every day. And they think, in all areas of our life, America isn't old enough to act like that. We always done it that way. What's always compared to the age of Europe? Okay. All right. Back to Heifetz again. You were mentioning you go on tour. Let's pick up on that. And also you have scholarship programs.
Right. Well, as far as the touring programs are concerned, this actually began as sort of the continuation of the education program that we started here in the summertime in the communications.
Uh-huh.
In other words, we give these students all these tools. We equip them with new ways of thinking and speaking about the music and relaying that music.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go back to Juilliard.
Yeah.
Never mind all that stuff.
Oh,
on your fourth position.
Oh, my God.
So we created this program of outreach and community engagement called Heifetz on Tour. And the concept is fourfold. First of all, it is to continue the communication training here and career development for the students. So we take them for a week and sometimes it's right here in the Shenandoah Valley.
Uh-huh.
And we do, in essence, sort of like mini barnstorming tours. We might do a concert in Charlottesville, and then one in Waynesboro, and then one here in Stanton, and then one here in Lexington.
Mm-hmm.
So that helps us try to keep, as Stephen Covey would say, the saw sharp for our performers. It allows us to market and promote the uniqueness of the Heifetz Institute, because in this case, seeing and hearing is believing.
Yes.
It, of course, also is an important fundraising tool for us.
Of course.
And let me also add that it's a very important career development tool as well, because we pay the artists. We ask them to come and do this, and we make sure that they get paid at the end of a week.
Oh.
A week where we're looking to develop these players not just to play at Carnegie Hall, but really, I'm convinced that in this day and age, to make a living as a classical musician, you can't just be always playing the concert hall.
Exactly.
You've got to be a Swiss Army knife. You've got to have a lot of tools at your disposal. You've got to be ready to play for a group of second graders who are, you know, trying to stay in order on the floor.
Yes.
You've got to play at the garden club. You have to show up and play, you know, at a mental health facility. All places where people would not necessarily expect to hear classical music.
Mm-hmm.
But for us to make it relevant and contextual to all walks of life, it's important that our performers know how to reach people in those forms.
Yes.
To understand the different audiences and age and sophistication levels that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean to say sophistication, you know, condescendingly at all. You want that experience of hearing music made in front of you for the first time
mm-hmm.
to be absolutely magical. You want to hear joy, and you want to hear all of the great things that make classical music timeless, and why, you know, Beethoven and Bach and Mozart still speak to us.
Yes.
But the ability for us to not just sit there with our head again buried in the music stand doing that is a really important, we think, vital skill.
I think in an age when we are ever more, because of technology and smartphones, etc., so buried at looking down as opposed to really communicating with someone else. They can text and they can email, but can they communicate? I think this, yes, you are doing this reversal of that kind of solo within and not communicating. You're reversing that at a time when the rest of the world, through technology, is getting into the habit of burying their head and looking down. Scientists are already saying we're developing bad neck muscles or whatever for that. So kudos to you for, I think the arts lead the way anyway. I actually think the arts have a positive impact on the economy at any level, and yet it's the first thing that gets cut. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think about this all the time. I spent 20 years at NPR, sometime in public broadcasting in Charlotte and in Boston as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that is ever a struggle. I do tell people that, really, this is one of these cases where if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen. If you're going to be working in the nonprofit world, this is going to be a perpetual struggle. That doesn't make it. I think of the inaugural address of John F. Kennedy. We do these things precisely because they are hard.
Hard, yes.
And that is just something that we do it with great cheer and great energy, and it is, and many times it's really one convert at a time.
Yes.
I do think, though, to answer your question more directly, that I think even regardless of what your political affiliation may be, when you see the impact that I think people are all looking for authentic experiences. And when you see the impact that a place like Stanton or Charlottesville has, when somebody comes to the Paramount Theater, it's not just that they're buying their ticket to go see that production.
Mm-hmm.
Why, they're parking in the garage downtown.
Yes.
They're going into the restaurant. They're going to the wine bar afterwards. Oh, they're stopping in the gift shop and they're buying some postcards to mail home. No, they like that kitchen shop.
Yes.
They're looking for something to give as a gift.
Yes.
So when you take it in total, the economic activity that is generated by a destination, whether it's Charlottesville or Stanton or the Ford Center in Harrisonburg, it winds up being a tremendous driver
of
the economy.
Yes. You know, the tourism people are going to love us, but I couldn't agree with you more. Films coming into Virginia like crazy. And again, the Heifetz Institute, these have an impact at the very least on our immediate Central Virginia region, if not beyond. But when you think of your students going beyond, is there sort of a graduation after a summer program, or is there are there a number of years involved? How does that work with your festival?
That's a great question. We do talk about each year has a class. So, you know, we're talking about our class of 2015.
Uh-huh.
But we attract about, we're going to have 81 students this summer.
Wow.
And some of them come back for multiple years. You know, that they, some come for just 1 year, some may come for 2 or 3 years. And some of our, I'm very proud of the fact that some of our really talented, most brilliant alums, many of them have been on our Hyphens on Tour programs,
mm-hmm.
have all decided they want to come back as artists in residence.
Oh, wow.
So that we treat them almost as artistic ambassadors for the program, so that we can go and do that program at the public library or maybe at the Montessori school in Charlottesville,
yes.
and that sort of thing. But you asked a very interesting kind of emotional and underpinning question, too, because
mm-hmm.
one thing that we noticed coming here was that the last concert, it becomes such a community event, but then it was like the concert's over, it stops, goodbye. And everybody had this sort of acute sense of loss and not a sense of closure. So this year, at our final concert on August 7th, we're going to do a fantastic concert with all the players in the Institute involved, and we'll have them all on stage at one point.
Wow.
And then when the concert's over, we're all going to go outside under the tent and have a big old cookout. and for, you know, for everybody in the community, we think it's going to really be a terrific event.
Where do you perform your concerts? Where do your students perform at the end of the summer, physically?
The vast majority of our concerts take place on our home base at Mary Baldwin College, soon to be university.
Yes, that's right.
For the moment, Mary Baldwin College, and we have a concert venue there called Francis Auditorium at Mary Baldwin, very easy to get to. But in addition to that, we also perform at various other venues around town. Every Monday, we do a free concert at the Temple House of Israel, a historic Jewish synagogue in Stanton. And we've introduced something brand new this summer because we see a great potential correlation between our young classical artists and the tremendous amount of music making that happens here in the Shenandoah Valley with roots and folk and jazz and blues musicians.
Yes.
So we started a new series called Hyphens Hootenannies.
Oh, I wouldn't admit to it, but no.
So it's a little tongue-in-cheek, but the idea is we're going to be in different venues all around town for these sort of informal Saturday night jam sessions that really meant to be collaborations between our Hyphens students and a lot of musicians that are here in the area. And it's funny, we've been hearing quite a bit of buzz about them, and we think it's be a nice way of sort of involving Hyphens more in the community.
Yes. Have you ever thought of some kind of combination crossover there as you were teaching your musicians the importance of communication? And you're going to go out and perform with other styles of music. How about classical music and theater? That's not so far removed. What are your thoughts? How does that touch you?
Oh, absolutely. No, but we're always looking for those. I've always felt in my career that the most interesting and important music often happens at the frontiers.
Where
boundaries push up against each other is where that's where the interesting things tend to happen. So we're always looking for ways that will stretch the boundaries and the genres a little bit of these students. And I'll tell you two things about the profile of our students, and I hold both of them to be true. The first one is that in many ways these students of ours are like young athletes in that the next quarterback for UVA has already been identified. He's probably 8 years old and playing in a Pop Warner field somewhere,
yes.
where people already have their eye on him because they can see his talent.
Yes.
And you see this with tennis prodigies and others. And, you know, these, I can look across America and see where the young, talented 12-year-old violinists are. We probably know most of them already. So in that case, these are budding young players. It's kind of stunning when you look at the profiles of our Hyphens students. These aren't people that casually picked up their instrument a few years ago.
Yes.
They have all been playing since they were 3 or 4 or 5 years old.
Yes.
It, now, it always amazes the audience because the first question they ask is like, how long have you been playing? It's like, since I was 4.
Yeah.
Sort of matter of fact. But here's the other thing. So on the one hand, these people have been trained to play at the highest level of their ability
yes.
since you know, for, they've all been playing here for at least a decade before they show up at the Heifetz Institute. On the other hand, that doesn't say or suggest that they're not interested in all kinds of other musical genres. So they may have a teacher who tells them Beethoven, Beethoven, and maybe a little Brahms. At the same time, you know, we have a gifted young viola student who's also hard at work creating. He's got a duo that he runs between viola and guitar. He's running, he's doing film music composition and video game composition.
Wonderful.
So these are people that are interested in all kinds of different musical genres and experimentation. So really, it's our goal, if you ask me, you know, where do I, would I like to see the Heifetz Institute in 5 years, is that we really are a place that has this profile for innovation, experimentation, freedom, at the same time, playing at the highest possible standards.
Yes. That is such a beautiful thing. And I know from not only our conversation today, but from what I've heard about you and the Heifetz, that you are well on your way to that. When you're open to and embrace innovation, when you are looking for places where the arts and culture and history can intersect, and education, I mean, I'm not trying to leave out anyone, we all grow from that because we're all really connected to it. We just, I don't know why we resist it so. Anyway, this has been fabulous. Before we go, let us know, how do we find you? Give us a website. How do we apply? Is it too late to apply? What do our listeners need to know about getting connected as student, as audience member, as neighbors, as investors, whatever? Tell us all.
Well, I would be remiss if I did not say, Marcello, that we are a 501c3 nonprofit institution.
Okay.
So as I always like to tell people, just because you're nonprofit doesn't mean you're pro-loss. So we're always looking, you know, to tell people our story, and certainly part of my job as the executive director is also to be the chief rainmaker. So that,
yes,
you know, our job is always to keep ourselves viable and in business. So HeifetzInstitute.org, HeifetzInstitute.org is the website. We have 41 concerts coming up this summer in Stanton. And in fact, if you visit our website, you can see about the All Access Season Pass, which is one heck of a bargain. You can also order tickets in advance or just show up at the door.
Yes, that's always good too. All right. I can't tell you how wonderful it's just been. I could go down memory lane for another hour, but all the things you remind me of, I did a stint at Juilliard, et cetera, but this, what you are doing in Stanton, Virginia, for young people from all over the world who clearly have technically an artistic, tremendous talent, but that you are adding to that the ability to break down the walls between their performance and their audience, and to be able to communicate about the work, which of course communicates about themselves. I think that, as you say, that's just, that's one of a kind. I mean, maybe there are some people out there trying it, but I've seen things done very differently. And I applaud you and the Heifetz International Music Institute. I'd like to say we have been talking to Benjamin K. Rowe, the executive director of the Heifetz International Music Institute, with a global reach. They have a wonderful summer series of concerts, 41 concerts this summer, 2015, in Stanton, Virginia. We hope you will support them in any and every way you can. Thank you so much, Ben, for being on the show, and all the best to you. All the best.
A real pleasure, Marcello. Thanks for the invitation.
You got it. Bye now.
Stay with us, as we'll be right back with a final comment from The Reasonable Voice.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. Religion is an inescapable facet of society. Here in America, home of the Bible Belt and megachurches as far as the eye can see, Christianity is king. Its creeping influence has its fair share of critics, but likely few are as entertaining as Brian Tannelly's dramedy, Saved. Jenna Malone plays Mary, a devout teenager who loves praising the Lord with her best friend Hillary Fay. When Mary's boyfriend Dean comes out to her, Mary proceeds to follow through on a vision wherein Jesus tells her to save Dean's soul by losing her virginity to him.
When Mary winds up pregnant and Dean is sent away to a Christian rehab center, she is forced to navigate her senior year confused and concerned about her once firm beliefs. Malone's performance as Mary is a knockout punch filled with soul-searching that rises far above run-of-the-mill teen angst. Mandy Moore's turn as the more radically religious Hilary Faye is also a highlight. Watching her bounce off the walls in response to Mary's loss of faith is equal parts hilarious and humbling. Saved pulls off the high wire act of realistically portraying what it's like to be forced to confront your beliefs while refraining from making a mockery of devout religion. Saved. Not in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Hello, I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, thanking you for joining us and becoming one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. Missing you and us, too. There was little reason for my grandmama to leave her huge farm to go into town, a few miles away, for groceries, gasoline, farm equipment, overalls, and newspapers. Now I only go back for the funerals and to hear on the breeze what I've missed. I'm not into romanticizing the past, believing things, for the most part, are always improving, until G.W. and Cheney, of course, as long as what's new doesn't obliterate what's been with what's coming round the bend. I don't miss Mayberry or my slumlord friends on Shelter Island, but I do miss New York City neighborhoods, walking city blocks, and being constantly in rehearsals for something. I miss Gypsy and Heinrich, best and worst watchdogs, respectively. Don't miss Dad and Mom so much as it still feels like they're here. But I do miss people who trim their trees back from power lines, so when the winds come, we keep our AC. I miss hailing a yellow cab for Carol Channing, strolling Midtown with Colleen Dewhurst, and chatting with James Whitmore about the next voice you hear. He said I was too young to have seen it, but while other boys my age were outside playing ball, I was watching old movies on TV. Mr. Whitmore was so proud of the fact that he had made the movie with Nancy Reagan before she met Ronnie. But I told him I would never forget what it felt like when God spoke to him on his radio. I miss that. I miss taking time to tune up with morning prayers and reel-to-reel Gregorian chant. I don't miss fast cars and curvy roads, for that's still how I relax. I miss Jimmy Stewart and Harvey, Yul Brynner and the American Original Six, Gregory Peck, whom Mom told, my son is an actor too. I never miss Florida except when I think of hurricanes 250 miles offshore pinning me against the lifeguard chair, streaking back my hair with beach sand, my lips rimmed like a margarita glass, and the ocean some distance away lapping occasionally at my toes, as a seagull above makes no headway because of headwinds. I miss the silence that can only be heard without the din, and I miss people who understand the wisdom in that. I miss Marvin's white boots as much as our drama classes. I miss my voice lessons with Wayne and Ernie, and both the Peabody and Baltimore Opera in the days of George Woodhead and Bill Januzzi, the only man who smoked more cigarettes than my 61-year-old brother, just diagnosed with the lungs of an 80-year-old. I miss him already. For me, missing is more happy memories than sad longing. But I do miss not seeing my best friend Lance Thomas Viney. However, I don't miss the Silver Diner, his favorite dining choice. I do miss my annual trips to Europe, but it was a wonderful career that suspended them, so we make our choices. I miss dates on letters, even to find telephone numbers on bills, and I miss sleeping more than 5 hours a night. But most of all, I miss who we were in the 60s. I miss Abraham, Martin, and John, and Bobby, too. Join us. Become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. Thank you.
Thank you for continuing to listen to, support, and share the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio with family and friends, especially online. We enjoy hearing from you, and in response, yes, we are now accepting new company and business advertisers and welcoming organizations seeking to be one of our sponsors. So please do continue to email us at thereasonablevoice@gmail.com. However, if you prefer to simply make a donation, your donations are greatly appreciated and can be made through PayPal by clicking on the donate button found at the top of the homepage of the Reasonable Voice. Website.
Thank you for joining us today to make every day as reasonable as possible. We hope you will download and share our downloadable podcasts. I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world.